Good morning. 10:57 in the morning on February 5th, a gorgeous, quiet Sunday morning here in Greeley, Colorado. I don't know what I'm thinking about today. Actually, it was the first thing that I thought I would talk about was measuring success. One of the comments on yesterday's post had to do with the offhand comment I made about talking about success and different ways to measure success and how this book or that book might be the most successful based on different criteria of success. Somebody wanted to know what I thought those books were. Was it Tony, I think, or John? One of you. If I go by strictly by acceptance and pickup, it has to be quarter share, if only because it's been around the longest. It's had the most opportunity to grow its audience. At 22,000 plus listeners and another perhaps 20,000 people who've read the book in print or ebook form, that's almost a 500,000. That's almost 50,000 people. 500,000, yeah, not quite. That's almost 50,000 people, which is astonishing for somebody that nobody knows. Because when you think about it, really nobody knows who I am, which is okay with me. I'm not a name. Somebody says science fiction, they'll know Connie Willis, they'll know Neil Gaiman, they'll know, apparently not know Clifford Simak. But nobody's going to know Nathan Lowell. Well, very few on the grand scheme of things. So the idea that there are almost 50,000, something in excess of 40,000 people who've either listened or read my books is a bit staggering. And for one measure of success, I think it's pretty successful. In terms of story, I have to think that, and I keep going back to this, it's kind of a toss-up between Ravenwood, which I think is a very successful story, and Owner's Share, which a lot of people hate because of the ending, but which I think is, in an odd way, a measure of success in itself. To look at Ravenwood, I think the story is... I think I was very successful in doing what I set out to do, which was to talk about this idea of age, this notion that people have about getting older, this idea that you make your decisions and then you live out your life, which is what, honestly, I thought for a long time. And maybe it was only last year or the year before, where I really came to the decision, I came to the conclusion that, at what point do I envision that happening? Because I make new decisions about my life every day. And some of them are planned. Some of them are, oh my God, what do we do now? So it's an interesting question. And I think that book does a really good job of setting up a character that is not the standard quest fare. It sets up a character that explores a part of fantasy that is acknowledged, but seldom written about. I can't think of another book that talks about the power of the crone to affect change, to affect the world, to influence the way things go. I can't think of another story where the person gaining magic is going into old age. So I think from the perspective of doing what I set out to do, Ravenwood might be the most effective because, among other things, it's one of the few books that I set out to do something, and I think it worked. Now, to a lesser extent, of course, South Coast, I set out to explore the notion of the son of the shaman is a shaman. And along the way explored a bit of the relationship between father and son and what exactly son of the shaman means to people. I didn't get quite far enough to actually pick up Sarah Krug's story there, but it's coming. It's coming. And then a captain's share, owner's share, I think is really successful because of the response that I keep getting. Now, the initial response was somewhat less flattering, perhaps, because the idea that we should end the series with Ishmael Wong, a broken and lonely man, which is one reading of the ending, not necessarily the one that I put on it, but one that some readers have interpreted. That level of engagement says that perhaps not just on that one book, but the whole series culminated in a way that a lot of people were left feeling something about the writing, about the story, about Ishmael, to a certain extent about me. I know I learned a lot about me, particularly my relationship with other men and my relationship with women. Very interesting mirror that got held up there without my really being aware of it. So there's some interesting things that happened there. So I think from that perspective, owner's share was really quite successful. And of course, then there's the two Parsec Awards that were captain's share and owner's share. So those were measures of success as indicated by awards. People who are knowledgeable about the art form of podcast, about the idea of a long-form narrative in podcast fiction, deemed those two works to be the best of the year. And part of that is a hope story. Part of it is, without a doubt, production values. My production values have gotten a lot better since those first two stumbling episodes of Quarter Share. And then there's the books that have made the most money, and I think that's a tough one, because I think all three of the books that have made it out of Ryden's press and into Amazon and out into the world have made an enormous amount of money. I don't know that one has made more because of the nature of the way they got released. Quarter Share came out before the big explosion in fall of 2010. And then right after that, we got Half Share. And then very shortly after that was Full Share. So those three books, released all in the same year, April to April, have had almost the same amount of time to earn revenue because of the way the first 6 months or so of Quarter Share sales occurred. It didn't really earn that much. I was actually quite concerned about what I was going to do come January of 2011. Then I get the first payment on my royalties and realized that I needed to be careful with my income taxes. So, you know, looking at different dimensions of success, where do I feel the most satisfied with the storytelling? Where do I count the success for where people have written to me to tell me how much the books meant to them or mean to them? How do I measure the message from the Marine in Iraq who, on reading Full Share, had a rather emotional response. These are touchstones. These are places where one can find success and measure it in different ways. The total number of units is a bit staggering when you think of 4.2, 4.3 million downloads. I think that the books, all of the books taken in total, have been purchased 50,000 times. I could wish that perhaps Ravenwood might be a bit more commercially successful, but the other side of that is that it hasn't had anywhere near the amount of time that QuarterShare has to build up a listenership, to build up an audience. That I only wrote that book in 2010, the end of 2009, but it only has been loose in the world since January 2010, barely 2 years. And if I think of where QuarterShare was in the January of 2009, yeah, it was popular. I had 3 more books in the series following QuarterShare that Ravenwood still doesn't have yet. There was a lot of buzz about the stories because they were unusual and unique. A lot of that buzz is still out there with Ravenwood, but part of the issue is that there's a lot of competition for buzz these days, and science fiction gets a lot. And while fantasy does get a lot, I haven't really been active in promoting in the fantasy milieu. So I really can't complain that, I don't think we've sold 10,000 units of Ravenwood yet. It's probably something along the line of 5,000 units. But that's since Halloween. So we just had Groundhog's Day. So it's barely a quarter. It's barely 90 days since the book has been out. I really can't complain. For what it is, for where it is in the evolution of the Kenneth Fairport Adventure franchise, for the attention that it's gotten over the year since it was out in audiobook, and for the 3 months or so since it's been published in paper, it's done remarkably well. In part, I'm sure, because of the leverage from the other books, but still. And I haven't talked about the shorts. I haven't talked about the story that I did for The Crypt. And I haven't talked about the story that I did for T. I haven't talked about the story that I did for Matthew Wayne Selznick, Mouse Mousy. I was going to read Mouse Mousy for Starship Sofa. Tony C. Smith said he'd run it if I would read it. And then when I wrote to Matthew about it, he gave me the words that he wanted to be in the plug, in the credit for that particular reading if I was going to use it outside of the book. And the credit was almost longer than the story. So, I don't think I'm really going to read a 7-sentence paragraph at the end of a short story. I just won't promote it. It's not worth it. I don't want that to be associated with me, so I probably won't do that. I do have to get A Light in the Dark out, though. Tony's been chiding me that it's easier to get a story off from Neil Gaiman than it is from me. And the reality is, Neil Gaiman writes more short stories than I do. I've only written about 5. I wonder if I should do the Dr. Mercury story for him. I should talk to J.R. Blackwell about that, because getting a good quality studio recording of that could be fun. And that's a pretty good story. That's one of the stories that I really do like that I've written. I like them all, I think, or I wouldn't put them out. But there's something about the Hidalgo that, it was a sit down and rip it off in one sitting and then come back and fine tune it. And and I think I only made like two or three passes through it. It was one of those, oh my God, it's due tomorrow. I've got to get this thing out of here now stories. But I'd been thinking about it for weeks, if not months, ever since Jared Axelrod solicited it. And I thought, there's some things about that I want to explore, the idea of a woman who cannot be controlled by shame, which, while taken in an almost humorous vein in this sort of superhero universe of Dr. Mercury, is actually pretty important when you start thinking about how people think about women and how people think about how to control women and the fact that people even think about trying to control women. Whereas you don't really hear people talking about, well, how do we keep men under control? So I really, that reading of that I did, I was very pleased with the way the story came out. I was very pleased with JR's response to it. And then the reading at Balticon last year, the response to that was staggering and quite gratifying. So in a certain way, that was a great success. As was the steampunk story that I did for T and Pip, The Astonishing Amulet of Amenartis. The idea of writing an homage to H. Rider Haggard, to pull those ideas and tropes from the earlier time and to create a story that could have been written then by him, that could have been about life in those days and yet could just as easily apply now. Because if we think about technology in its many forms, there's parts of technology that a lot of people consider to be as insidious, as mind-sucking, as the astonishing amulet. Now, we don't take our technology and then use it to go out and rip the legs off people, but you know, if we think about military technology, yeah, actually, I guess we do. So I thought it was an interesting story that flowed well and had a lot of little hidden ideas in it. Like, he came in on the White Star Line, which was the same line that it was an airship, but that it was an airship of the White Star, which was the Titanic's shipping company, that there was the acknowledgement of the British Empire in East Africa there in Durban, the notion of the Zulu War, and why did the Zulus have an uprising? I didn't really get into that too much, but it was the backdrop of the story. So it was very nicely informed by history and yet separate from and not part of the history that we know. So it was a very satisfying story. I thought quite successful in its own way to help promote the Books and Brawn franchise, the Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences. Very much fun. So, you know, it's hard for me to look at any individual story and say, well, that one wasn't very successful, or to measure my success in terms of this success over that success. There are some things that I could wish I had done better. And I think the day that feeling goes away will be the day that I need to stop writing. There's a trope out there, there's an idea out there that you have to polish every story until it's as good as you can get it. The reality, I think, that I have found, at least for me, is that polishing only goes so far. At some point, you have to hold it up to the light. And once you've held it up to the light, you can't polish it anymore. It has to stand on its own. But that's the point where you start the next cycle. That's the part where you start the next story. That's the part where you start the next telling. and you think, I learned something from that last one. And it was good. It was as good as I could make it. But now I think I can make one that's better. And that's, I think, where a lot of people get bogged down, because they think, oh, well, I could make this one better if I would only take some more time. And the problem is, until you hold it up to the light, until you see the reflection in your audience's eyes, you can't really see what the story is. You can't see the depth of it. You can't see the width of it. You can't get a good feel for its dimensions until people start responding to it or not. So I think that's kind of an important idea. I could also be fooling myself, because I'm good at that. It's the problem with being in your own skull, is that you sometimes you think the things you want to think, and you're really good, at least I am, really good at ignoring the things that you don't want to think. There's a little bit of ice underneath this snow. That you can hear it crunching, I'm sure. It's also slick as hell. There. Alright, back on dry sidewalk again. And I'm almost around. I'm almost to the corner. Almost to the back gate. So yeah, I didn't really think I would talk that much about success. I didn't really think there was that much to say. And I gave this high school student a much more abbreviated answer. But I only had 40 minutes with them, which is only a little more than I have with you every day. And I only had one shot with them. I didn't want to bore them. I might go back, you never know. Anyway, I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. I'll talk to you then.